The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back. 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. No way, you're not supposed to say it. You know that what I mean by that, right? You're supposed to say zero, not O. Zero, not O. You're also supposed to, Bill and I, my producer Connie, and I learned today a form. That we could probably adapt to many instances in life. And it has to do with passing a baton in a relay race. It's kind of like the etiquette in hiking. Who do you give the right of way to, the guy going up or the guy going down? And we learned in the relay race, Bill, do you want to tell them what we discovered, whose responsibility the safe transfer of the baton is?
The one passing the baton.
That's right. The one passing the baton has the responsibility of putting it in the receiver's hand. And we learned that in the delivery of my monologue today, didn't we?
Yes. I fumbled it.
Well, I don't know. It's just that the responsibility is in the passer's hand. We could adapt probably a lot of these rules to life. I like the hiking rule about etiquette, too, who gets the right of way, the person going up or the person going down, the passing of the baton. All of these things probably could use a new book. So, too, could a new book be used when it comes to threats of violence over jury decisions and elections. We're all on tenterhooks hoping to have a peaceful night in Louisville today. So far, well, it hasn't struck dark too much yet there, but there is a curfew imposed throughout Louisville tonight based on the scenes that emanated from the grand jury decision on the three officers involved in Breonna Taylor's death. Again, all credit to Daniel Cameron, who in the midst of this near chaos, had the presence of a cool, calm, and collected mind and explaining everything and taking every single question that came his way calmly. You know, there's the notion of making news by having your hair on fire. And as I was speaking about with John Dabrowski earlier, making everything sound as extreme as possible. It's not good in a democracy to engage in extremes where they aren't, especially where they aren't warranted. It's unhealthy for us to normalize the notion that we have to shut down an entire city, which Louisville was preemptively today before the grand jury came out with its decision. The powers that be there had shut down the entire city. That is not a healthy thing to do, a preemptive surrender, if you will, to the notion that riots will happen. It's not a good faith in the American people. And it's not a good faith by the American people who engage in these kinds of riots, which are meant to be, of course, blackmail towards juries, towards law enforcement, towards elected officials, and in elections. We are beginning to see now an increase of rhetoric by the left that should Donald Trump be reelected, heck, we're seeing it should he nominate a Supreme Court justice and the Senate confirm a Supreme Court justice, that there will be violence in the streets. How do you operate a Republican form of government? How do you operate any kind of democracy under that kind of threat? And we become, as I say, inured, numb to this. It almost goes in passing and without comment. I was reading something Professor Ed Erler wrote over at The American Mind. He wrote, "Rioting to influence jury decisions is a lesson easily transferred to elections. If elections were a form of silent riot, then in the simple-minded analysis of race baiters, open riots have an equal claim to elections. Elections, in their perfervid imaginations," that's a good word, perfervid, means passionate. "Elections in their perfervid imaginations are thus taking place in cities nationwide, directed today by BLM and Antifa with the complicity of the Democratic Party. These riots can disrupt or cancel previous forms of election by intimidating voters and candidates, to say nothing of canceling elections. In fact, we may no longer need elections. The logic of no justice, no peace has been extended to elections and Supreme Court nominations. Michelle Obama practically said as much at the Democratic National Convention, saying, quote, if you think things cannot possibly get worse, trust me, they can and they will if we don't make a change in this election. If we have any hope of ending this chaos, we have got to vote for Joe Biden like our lives depend on it, close quote. What do you think that means? Like our lives depend on it. Talk about extreme rhetoric. Talk about extreme rhetoric. So when you see Democratic leaders saying Donald Trump is responsible for 200,000 deaths, Joe Biden said as much. He could have prevented every one of them, Joe Biden said last week when Donald Trump wasn't on his way to executing 200 million Americans, I suppose. And when you have Michelle Obama say, like our lives depend on it, it's a matter to them not of differences of opinion, as Thomas Jefferson spoke about in his first inaugural. They've even gone beyond Thomas Jefferson's warning when he said differences of opinion shouldn't be seen as differences of principle. They've gone beyond differences of principle and have ramped it up and increased it, the volume, to the level of life and death. Life and death. Erler concludes, as Michael Anton explained on this website recently, The American Mind, Democratic operatives are now speaking openly of rejecting the results of the election in November. A recent article in the Daily Beast states, quote, that the larger game plan is to apply pressure through mass mobilization, close quote. Within the Democratic Party today, quote, there is dispute over whether Biden should even concede if he wins the popular vote but loses the Electoral College, close quote. It's playing out in real time. Riots are fast on their way to becoming elections by other means. If leftists have their way, they will decide all electoral questions from here on out with mob rule. Many of them have been aiming at this target for a long time. And it makes sense now as to why they're doing it. Why they're doing it. So to the left in the Democratic Party, what you could not achieve at the ballot box was easily enough, taken care of by the filing of court cases, by appealing to the judiciary and engaging the judiciary in all matters of public policy with, of course, an outcome-based jurisprudence. It wasn't, let's just put judges up there to rule on propositions and legislation. It's let us put left-wing judges on there who can distort the notion of an independent judiciary and what the Constitution says so that we can get the outcomes we lost by virtue of the ballot or legislation. That's what's extreme. When Chuck Schumer goes to the Senate floor, as he did today, and says that it is our duty to stop Donald Trump from putting a right-wing justice on the court, what does he mean by a right-wing justice? He could have said conservative. He didn't. He could have just said justice. He didn't. He has to say right-wing because he has to make us look like there's something extreme in what we believe, particularly in judicial philosophy. What we believe in judicial philosophy is fairly straightforward. I've seen the speeches. I've read the law review articles. I know what those who claim to be original jurisprudence or original intent jurisprudentialists think. Amy Coney Barrett herself said it in a speech. It's that we be fair judges without a predetermined outcome, analyzing everything that comes to us through the language of the Constitution, regardless of our personal preferences. Now, you think we can't do it? We, of course, can do it, and that was the norm with the Supreme Court, with a few exceptions here and there. We used to know those exceptions by heart. Those exceptions were such things as the Dred Scott decision and Plessy versus Ferguson. We used to know those. But now if you listen to the left, they use all the same reasoning of those once agreed upon exceptions to get the outcomes they want by distorting the Constitution so that they can impose left-wing policies upon us. So it used to be for them that they could just use the courts to override democratic norms. I'm worried now that they're using riots to override them. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It is a delight to welcome to the show, to welcome to our state, Eric Trump, the executive vice president of the Trump Organization. I love how he puts up his Twitter biography. He has that. And then his second ID, husband to Laura Trump. Good for you, Eric Trump. And thank you for coming to Phoenix. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thanks, Seth. It's been an unbelievable day. We did Latinos for Trump, and we did Evangelicals for Trump, and the energy here is unbelievable. I mean, I'm having so much fun, but I mean, the energy here is just awesome. So everywhere we go, it's literally hundreds of people, and it's awesome.
No, you guys are about energy, and I love it, and you guys are great at it, and we really thank you for spending so much time here. It means a ton to us, as you and your family mean a ton to us. Eric, tell us a little bit about the Latinos for Trump and any other groups you have been working with and talking to, because I want to talk a little bit about the minority vote in this election, which I expect different things from than years past. Good things.
Well, you know, we have Black Voices for Trump, and we have Latinos for Trump, and we have Women for Trump, which, you know, my wife Laura very well, and she runs that. And, I mean, every one of her rallies is just unbelievable. And I just did Assyrians for Trump, which was incredible. I mean, the energy was off the charts. And you know, people love this country, and they're scared of socialism. I mean, if you actually look at so many of the groups I just mentioned, they literally ran away from socialism.
That's right. They ran away from governments
that, you know, literally kind of somewhat resemble the AOCs and the Ilhan Omars of the world. And, Medicare for All. And, if you look at this Democratic Party, Seth, they want to get rid of 180, million private health care plans. They want to, decimate religion. I mean, the Democrats have become the party of the atheist. I mean, they want to decimate faith in this country. They want to take away your Second Amendment. They want to raise taxes by $4 trillion. They want to spend $90 trillion on a Green New Deal, 95% of which, most of that money is spent in foreign countries. China's the world cleaning up their problems, not even spent, here in the U.S. I mean, I could go on and on, but I mean, this party is radically, radically crazy. They want to stop all oil and gas. So, we have $1.90 oil at the pumps, gas at the pumps, the lowest it's ever been because my father made this country energy independent. And they literally want to get rid of all of that. All the while, you have California that's having roving blackouts and, because they don't have enough. I mean, some of the policies of these people are absolutely insane. And then when they don't get their way, they throw a tantrum. They want to stack the Supreme Court. They want to, it's really incredible. And
they're truly bullies. Yeah, no, I think that's right. They're truly bullies, especially when they engage in the censoring of us and the canceling of our positions, which leads me, if I can, Mr. Trump, we're talking to Eric Trump, if I can ask you, sir, your thoughts on what has become known as the quiet or silent Trump supporter. They have cowed a lot of conservatives into staying quiet or into not expressing their views, whether it's in the workplace, at social gatherings, or even in polls. I've seen several studies now that show this is a real thing, which leads me to believe that we're doing a lot better than we think. And even though we're doing pretty well, we're doing a lot better than we think. How real do you see that? I know you're in a specialized area, but you have traveled the country and you look at a lot of data, Eric Trump. What do you see about, or what do you think about this silent Trump voter? It's a real thing, isn't it?
Well, Seth, there's no question it is. First of all, I think the silent voter has actually become a very vocal voter, especially over the last 6 weeks. I've seen something vastly change. And I'm telling you, I mean, the events I just left today, you wouldn't believe how many Trump Make America, I mean, everywhere, absolutely everywhere. The spirit was incredible. But I'll just give you a little analogy. In 2016, when we were running against Hillary, we would dial sample sets to campaign just to test it by phone. Who are you voting for? You know, Trump or Clinton, right? And then they would call those, they would send an email or kind of electronic phone call, meaning press one for Hillary, you know, two for Trump.
Sure.
And they would do that. And we noticed a 13% difference between the two, meaning there was 13% of people would not tell the person, would actually lie to the person on the phone because they didn't want to be judged and they didn't want to be this. And then they show up at the polls and they check a box. And, you know, people are sick and tired of it. They're sick and tired of the cancel culture. You know, we have a First Amendment right in this country. It's the First Amendment for a reason. It's not the Second Amendment. It's not the Third Amendment. It's not the Tenth Amendment. It's the First Amendment, which is freedom of speech. And, you know, this other party, you know, they believe in free speech until you say something that they disagree with.
Correct.
And then they try and cancel your voice, and then they try and target you. They're bullies. And they always said that they were the party of tolerance. And they're the least tolerant people ever. And people are starting to see that.
I think so too.
You know, Nancy Pelosi and all these people, I mean, they've spent the last 4 years trying to take out my father as opposed to actually helping this country. And you look at the amazing things that my father has done for this nation, whether it's the economy or peace in the Middle East or rebuilding our military or protecting our Second Amendment or school choice in this nation. You know, I mean, look at your 401ks right now. Look at your pension plans and IRAs and look how much they've gone up in value. And look where our military sits now and the Space Force and prescription drug pricing coming down and the amount of time he spent fixing Obamacare, which was the biggest disaster in the history of,
healthcare law, easily the biggest. And what's interesting about all that, Eric, is this is so obviously evident to those of us that do our work. I was trying to kind of discuss what the front pages of the major papers were reporting on this morning. They are just retreading every negative thing they possibly can that they tried and didn't stick 4 years ago with the American people or enough of the American people. It is really clear to me that the media, the journalists of today, have just become the communications wing of the Democratic Party, which is why you have to fly around the country and do as much as you do, which is why we come to work every day. There's a lot to counter here. And it's a lot different of an environment than we're used to.
Hey, there's no question. That's why my father believes in Twitter and social media. Yep. That's why we use it so effectively. Because
and isn't that interesting? That's what the critics say you need to turn off. Isn't that interesting, right?
Yeah, ironic, right? Yeah. No, I say that every single day, Seth. And, you know, it's because it's the only platform that we can you know, reach the American people unfiltered. And that's why I get out there. And Biden or Harris, neither of them have been to Arizona yet this campaign cycle. Neither of them have showed up in the state. And I was actually asked by one of these crazy media outlets this morning. They go, well, doesn't it look desperate that your father's been here and you've been here and your wife's been here and, you know, you've been going around the state and you've been working very hard? I go, desperate? How does that look desperate? Like, I think that's it's a beautiful thing. I mean, we put passion, we put hard work into everything we do. I mean, basement Biden, Joe Biden hasn't left his basement in 3 weeks. I mean, he took one trip down to Florida. I mean, he's not willing to work for it. They're not willing to work for it. They take people's vote for granted. We as a family will never, ever, ever stop working. It's just...
The energy is amazing. I think we take it as an honor that you're here working for our votes. And, you know, I don't think Kamala Harris was asked if she was desperate when she flew to meet with the governor to talk about fires in California. I thought it was disgusting that she didn't go and visit with sheriff's deputies who were shot, but that she would go to California to visit with the governor about fires. No one asked her if she was desperate.
Yeah, well, I mean, you see how she's targeted. Law enforcement. Kamala Harris came out and said that she wanted to defund all police.
Right.
Joe Biden came out 4 weeks ago and said, I want to reallocate all, you know, police budgets to social workers. And he's saying all sorts of crazy things. You know, so the same people that want to take your guns away are the same people that want to abolish police. And they want to increase your taxes by $4 trillion. And, you know, the same people that gave $150 billion to Iran, which was Joe Biden, you know, a country that chanced death to America, is the same person that wants to increase your taxes. I mean, Seth, you can't make this stuff
no,
up.
No, you like, can't, but I want...
This
no.
This is not the party of JFK.
No, it is not.
This is a radically left party.
Yeah, it's the party of the 1860s Democrat. Well, Eric, you are great to come here. Please come back and please call in again. It's great talking to you, and thank your family for all they're doing for this country.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Can't wait to be back on.
Great. Can't wait to have you. Eric Trump, folks. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. By the way, just one more thing I wanted to point out on the Breonna Taylor situation, the tragic and sad situation all around it. You know, for months and months and months, well, let me back up before I say that sentence. You've often heard me say that in these kinds of cases, it's easy for the first reports to be wrong or distorted or distortive. And for people to have wrong facts, wrong opinions. For months and months and months, we have been told this was a case of the police entering on a no-knock warrant without alerting Breonna Taylor and her boyfriend of their impending, you know, entrance, delivery of an execution of a search warrant. Indeed, Oprah Winfrey's campaign goes to a website that talks about the problem of the no-knock warrant in this case. Well, as we learned today, the no-knock warrant was recalled. The police were not executing a no-knock warrant and indeed did knock and announce themselves. It's easy to blow things up and have the wrong narrative define and determine an outcome or at least a theme. They were wrong. It doesn't make anything about what happened here better. But if we're going to have an attempt at self-government and an elimination of anarchy and riots, it would help if those who were propagating that now evident untruth would come out and speak as strongly about in their correction of that wrong fact. We get something wrong here, we say it. I don't have the megaphone Oprah Winfrey has. Few do. She got something wrong. She should say it. It might help calm just a little bit. Truth is the friend of calm. Falsehood and distortion is the friend of anarchy and riot. I just wanted to get that out there. Sandy is in Peoria. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, Seth. How are you, hon?
I am well. How are you?
Oh, busy, busy. I've been, trying to get everybody to vote Trump. So it's been hectic, especially for our Assyrian community. We usually vote, we are Assyrian Americans. For those who don't know who Assyrians are, they are the oldest nation, one of the oldest nations among the nation of Israel. Speak Aramaic.
That's right. That's right. There's a question as to what the oldest city in the world is, and it might, you know, it's either, it might be Jericho, it might be in Syria. Right. You are right.
Yeah. But Assyrians are from what is called Iraq today,
yep.
Mesopotamia,
yep.
And we are related closely. We have the same alphabet as our Jewish brethren and numbers, so we are very, very close with the Jewish community in terms of our identity and everything. We are Christian. The only president, Seth, in history who has cared about our community is Donald Trump, who has listened to the suffering of the oldest Christians in the world. And we are proud, first of all, to be Assyrian American. We always vote conservative. Just so you know, we are mostly conservative voters. We tend to, we have a lot of, you know, conservative values, so we tend to stick with, you know, the old school Abraham Lincoln, you know, the Constitution. The only thing, I got very excited when I heard Eric Trump. He is coming to Arizona, and he is meeting with the Assyrian community. So I want that to be out there for people to see what this president has done. He has reached out to people who other presidents, communities, this community has been neglected a lot because of the fact that, you know, with all the
Sandy, you are great. You are great. And I have a break and I want to talk to you a little bit more. I have Andy Biggs coming up. Are you able to hold or call back in the third hour?
Yeah,
either way, whatever you want to do, I'll give you the option. I'll put you on hold. You can hold or call back. I would love to hear from more of you. I have some questions for you, too. In the third hour, we're wide open. But we're going to talk, I think, to Andy Biggs in just a quick sec. But I thank you for that call. Thank you for that shot of energy and encouragement as well. But, yeah, I want to talk to you about foreign policy, the Middle East, and the two visions of Obama-Biden versus Trump-Pence. Because especially when it comes to Syria, there's a big difference. Thanks, Sandy. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. It is a delight to welcome back the chairman of the House Freedom Caucus representing Arizona's 5th Congressional District, member of, among other things, the House Judiciary Committee, Andy Biggs. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, Seth. How are you today?
I am doing just fine. It's great to have you with us today. And you wrote an open letter, you and a bunch of fellow Congress members, a group of fellow congressmen, wrote an open letter to President Trump encouraging him to nominate Judge Amy Coney Barrett. I am happy that you did. You want to tell us why you did that?
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. First of all, I want you to know that Amy Coney Barrett has actually already been vetted. She's been voted on by the Senate before. Her judicial record is exemplary. This is a person who has not a smirch on her personal character, but also she is an accomplished person. She's got a big family, a lot of kids. She's adopted two children. She and her husband are just fabulous people, and she'll be an excellent asset on the court. She finished number one in her law school class, so. This is just an absolute remarkable lady. I actually happen to know someone who dated her at one time, and I was talking to him. He says, "Oh yeah." He says, "This person, Amy Coney Barrett, is basically unassailable. She is just fabulous, a marvelous person. Great, she'll do great on the court."
Andy, that's the specific. Let's talk about the general for a second. The Democrats are making a great deal of hay. They're even threatening and attempting some form of political and street blackmail, if you will, that if the president nominates, which he will, and the Senate affirms, which we hope they will, his choice, assuming it's someone of Amy Coney Barrett's caliber or Amy Coney Barrett, that this is an inappropriate act, that this is not the standards Republicans have set for themselves, that this is a political power grab from an opportunity that shouldn't have arisen. You know exactly what I'm talking about. I wonder if you would just make the case, as we've been doing here. I'd love to hear it from your voice.
Yeah, there's so much we could talk about, but I'm just going to sum this up very simply and succinctly. There's a vacancy on the United States Supreme Court. The Constitution has set and established the way that you fill that vacancy. It isn't that you wait until a lame duck session. It isn't until you wait till after somebody gets there or doesn't get there. It's very simple. The president nominates. The Senate votes. That's it. And there is nothing untoward or irresponsible about the president doing that. Now, I mean, we could go in a lot of detail about it, but I'm just going to tell you very simply, he has the authority to do it, but not just the authority. He has the obligation to do it. And the Senate then has to make its determination, and they have the authority and the obligation to make a determination whether they want to fill that seat now, whether they want to confirm or not. And I think it's perfectly appropriate right now.
I was on the other side of a microphone the other day, Andy, being interviewed by, I guess it was the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, and they said, boy, you conservatives, you really take those judicial nominations seriously, don't you? You really think they matter a lot, don't you? And I said, well, of course, because we have a constitution, we think that matters a lot. But the fact is, if you look at the way Democratic nominees are handled versus the way Republican nominees are handled, it's not so long ago that we went through the Brett Kavanaugh experience. I think the argument could be made that the left takes it in some respects even more seriously, don't you think? Because this is actually their last readout and precinct of getting the politics, the political outcomes they want that lose with the common sense of American people via legislation and proposition.
Yeah, you're 100% right. The way I've actually been advocating this for a long time, the Democrats have trouble winning on their policies.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're not seeing them actually talk much about their policies right now in the Biden campaign. They rely on the courts to liberally and with an activist mind to legislate from the bench. And that's why they're always talking about things like, let's pack the bench. Let's pack it. Let's savage anybody that is nominated by a Republican, because they know that the way that they're going to implement their policies, and by the way, their socialist and their Marxist policies, is from the bench. And we've distorted what the Supreme Court's role is. We've basically ceded to them the position of a super legislative body. And that is not what was intended in the Constitution. And it is something that, in the history of our country, is a rather remarkable late development. It didn't happen until really late in the last century. And that's when you really saw advocacy go up. And that goes right at the hands of FDR. FDR threatened to pack the court unless they ruled in his favor. And actually, the switch in time that saved nine is when justice moved over, when they were going to dismantle President Roosevelt's New Deal because it was not constitutional. And they switched and said it is constitutional. And that has changed this nation, everything from the bureaucratic state to how we view courts ever since then.
Andy, Chuck Schumer took to the – we're talking to Andy Biggs, of course. And Chuck Schumer took to the Senate floor today to talk about how the effort is to stop the president from appointing another, quote-unquote, right-wing judge. It's really amazing where this country has put the set point when you think about what the left has done with the judiciary, what rights it has invented, what deviations from the Constitution it is engaged in, and they yet would call us right-wing. I would tell you, I think credibly, I mean, you're an attorney too, but I or ex or former or recovering, but I would tell you that today's Republican judicial appointments would have much more in common with the judicial appointments of people like FDR and Truman put on the bench. There's nothing right-wing about it. It's actually fairly common-sense constitutionalism, but that they have really done a good job of changing, as I say, what the median or set point of this is on the right-left valence. They are the ones engaging in actual left-wing jurisprudence. We don't engage in any kind of political jurisprudence.
Right. No, I think that's right. I mean, think about it this way. Our Republican presidents want to nominate originalist, textualist, structuralist. In other words, people who actually look at the Constitution as a document that has meaning. The Democrats are not there, which is why you have a couple of members of the U.S. Supreme Court today nominated by Democrat presidents who believe that the international law supersedes the Constitution.
Yep.
And that's because they are appointing people that are political in nature. They have an agenda that they're trying to get. And that is the whole issue that divides us. The Republican nominees don't have an agenda per se, other than to read the Constitution and apply it to the case before it. The Democrats on the other side, they don't want to just interpret or apply the law. They want to interpret and expand the law, and they don't want to just limit it to the case before them, which is really, that's what stare decisis is. You take the case before you, you rule on that case, and then everybody else comes along and says, well, our case is different or our case is the same, and then it just builds up this historical record of determinations. They want to expand that and say things like, well, you know, even though a previous case exists, we're going to expand it by taking into account what the International Criminal Court or the International Court of The Hague has said on this and apply that to not just this case, but all cases similarly situated.
Yeah.
And that really distorts what the court was meant to be.
Of course.
And I think even John Marshall would be absolutely astounded to see the prerogatives taken by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, no, he would. But Groucho Marx would be pleased. I'm thinking of his line, these are my principles. If you don't like them, I can find you new ones. It's as if Democrats on the court, liberals on the court said, this is our Constitution. If we can't find what we want in it, we'll find new ones. Andy Biggs, God bless you. Thank you for everything you do and
Thanks.
Are. Really appreciate you.
Thanks, Seth. Always good to be with you.
You betcha. Talk soon. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If you're thinking about selling your house or planning on selling your house, I want you to call the only real estate agent I would call, and that is James Wexler of JMG Real Estate. You can visit him at jameswexler.com. That's James Wexler, WEXLER.com, or call him at 480-386-0711. James guarantees to sell your home at market value, or he will pay the difference. For maximum convenience, he can also make you an upfront guaranteed offer within 24 hours. You don't want to leave any money on the table, and with James Wexler, you won't. Sandy, Glenn, Stephanie, don't go away. We're coming right back to you on the other side of this hour. There's room for more. 602-508-0960. Big day here, and we'll get you through it. We'll be right back.